Welcome to another edition of GhostBiz, right here on the Business Report. I'm Gary Struble, and every week I get the privilege of chatting to the finance ghost based in South Africa who scans through the markets around us and can bring us interesting information and often insightful information as to what's going on with some of the major companies that you may be invested in through your pension funds or through direct investments. So, Ghost, welcome back to the show, and let's perhaps start out with a company that's been in the news for a long time now, for all the wrong reasons, for a number of years, and that's Tongaat Hewlett. Perhaps it's worth just revisiting very briefly, but how did a company that's that big, Tongaat Hewlett was at one point an enormous enterprise, a brand very many Namibians would be familiar with, mostly just for the little quotes on the back of those brown sugar packets while you're waiting for your Wimpy coffee to arrive. How did Tongaat Hewlett get here, and why does it now look like they might remain listed despite all of the drama?
Hi, Gary. Yeah, what a start to the show. And Tongaat Hewlett is really just a victim of, well, you know, a few things at the end of the day, but certainly the allegations of accounting fraud and everything else would have been front and center in why Tongaat Hewlett ended up in this big mess and then a whole business rescue process and effectively a fight over it by the potential bidders who wanted to, you know, get their hands on the business. It really has been just a long and difficult and sordid tale. And unfortunately, it's ended in a very, very poor outcome for investors. And I think, you know, more than just the details of how Tongaat got into it and how these things can go wrong, I think it's a useful reminder that things can go wrong, even among listed companies. You know, you can see a listed company, unfortunately, basically go to zero or close to zero, as this one is effectively doing. And the latest news out of Tongaat is that actually it might stay listed, but personally, I doubt it. They're kind of just covering themselves there, that from a legal standpoint, there is technically a chance the thing could stay listed, because when effectively the new owners swap their debt for equity, they will end up owning, I think it's something like 97% of the shares. So technically, there's still a tiny little amount that will be held by minority shareholders who will have lost almost all of their money, but not quite all of their money. And there's actually a note in there that there might even be a mandatory offer then to shareholders, you know, to actually take them out. But it's still very technical and it still remains subject to lots of confirmations and calculations of exactly how the law will be applied here, because this is a pretty unusual situation. But the lesson in all of this is that you need to always be careful with any company, really. This is where diversification is actually the lesson. Because if you've got 10% of your wealth tied up in a company and then it goes to zero, that is going to be a horrible, horrible outcome for you. Truly it is. But if you've only got, you know, 1% of your company, or rather 1% of your wealth tied up in a company and that goes to zero, yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to especially hurt if you think to yourself what you could have done with that money instead. But as a percentage of your portfolio, you're going to be okay.
Take our attention off the markets just for a second, if you will. And many Namibians, most Namibians, would have been watching anxiously over the last few weeks after the South African elections as to what happens down south. The South African economy has a huge bearing on Namibian firms. And of course, many Namibian firms have shareholder connections in South Africa. It would appear after initial good news came out about a deal being brokered and the Rand recovering quite nicely, that the Rand has in fact now gone the other way. Could you perhaps just shed a little bit of light on what is affecting that? Because as you know, the Namibian dollar is pegged to the Rand, and the travails are often not of our making, but it is of interest. Why is the Rand over the last few days suddenly going the wrong way?
I can imagine actually sitting in Namibia that, you know, with a pegged currency, it must be quite irritating at times to watch what's happening in South Africa and just get affected by it to such an extent. But anyway, such is the nature of the South African-Namibian relationship. So look, daily moves in the Rand are extremely difficult to predict and extremely difficult to really pinpoint. Obviously, some of it is sentiment. So, you know, there's an element of how are people feeling about what's going on in South Africa. And there is an element of buy the rumor, sell the deal here. So this is something that happens a lot in M&A. Prices rally when there's rumors of a deal, but then they generally get sold off when the deal is actually announced because, you know, people have speculated on what the outcome might be and then they take profit when the outcome finally comes out. So that's just human emotion, but also just the way the market really works coming through. So here, the rumor effectively would have been the GNU and the fact would have also been the GNU, but obviously once cabinet was announced, etc. I think maybe other stuff like the relative lack of reform in cabinet. Yes, I think it looks a little bit more interesting than before, but it's still big and bloated and all over the show. So, you know, that doesn't help. I think the market understands that South Africa's economic situation is not going to heal overnight. Definitely not. We're on the right trajectory now, I think, but it's going to take time. So a lot of it, I think, would have been profit-taking. And then you also can't underestimate the other stuff that impacts the currency, because it's not just sentiment. So trade flows will be a huge part of it. The extent of foreign buying or selling of our assets, you know, the extent of rands moving in and out for major exporters and importers, that can also affect the level of the currency. And then the third element is what's going on offshore. You know, is it a strong day for the dollar? Is it a weak day for the dollar? What does that mean for the rand? So inevitably, the media love to jump onto these headlines. I see them in South Africa all the time with very sensationalist language. Rand crashes to 18.50. Rand stages a brave recovery to 18.10. Now, actually, the rand is, yes, it's reacting to what's going on in government, but it's also just doing what a currency does, which is moving around. And people forget the percentage move on these things. You know, back when the rand was at $7 to the dollar, if you can remember that long ago, a 20-cent move was way more impressive than when it's trading at 18 rand to the dollar. It's not about the number of cents, it's about the percentage.
Thanks for that insight. And perhaps in a linked question, have we seen the markets, specifically the JSE, have we seen any counters on the JSE that look particularly sensitive to what's happening in the political space?
So looking at JSE stocks, Gary, yes, for sure. The typical thing to look out for now is what they call the SA Inc. stocks. So these are, you know, South African focused companies. And I know that sounds like such a silly thing to say because we're talking about the JSE. But people forget the extent of the rand hedges, not just on the market, but also in the index. Because of what's happened in the last 15 years in South Africa, so many companies have gone in search of growth elsewhere in the world. So, you know, if you look at a business like Bidcorp, for example, they make very little of their money these days here in South Africa. So, you know, when you are trying to look at what are the opportunities to play this GNU theme, you need to actually find stuff that is going to directly benefit from an uptick in South African activity. So I do see people reference names like Afrimat and Raubex, and that's all very logical. You know, if we do see an increase in investment in South Africa, if we do see an improvement in GDP, then you have to believe that some of that will filter through into the retailers. And as I mentioned in Ghostmail this week, you know, you can be brave and you need to understand the risk you are taking here, but a really brave shout would be something like ArcelorMittal, which has by all accounts been a disaster. But one of the reasons it's been a disaster, yes, is Chinese domestic steel demand, which means that the Chinese have been flooding the international steel markets with their exports. But it's also been a lack of South African demand and poor South African infrastructure. If Transnet can improve, and if there is an uptick in infrastructure investment in South Africa, then ArcelorMittal is that classic example of something that is badly broken, where just some improvement would drive potentially a really strong rally in the share price. So that would appeal to those who are risk takers and speculators, those who are looking for something that is just a bit more steady and maybe they want to go a little bit more overweight to SA Inc. They would be looking at your more industrial type plays. And as I said, you know, some of your construction materials type businesses and maybe retailers, although I wouldn't dive into that. My pick, to be honest, for a GNU style recovery would be the South African REITs. I think that the property funds are paying decent yields. We are hopefully going towards a period of a drop in interest rates. And you have to believe that good economic activity trickles down into people spending in the malls, people taking up office space, and ongoing demand for logistics properties.
And then just lastly, Ghost, a story we've had an interest in the last couple of weeks and have mentioned a few times here on the show, and that is the recapitalization of Brait. We went into a little bit of detail on that last week, and it now looks like that Brait has basically their shelves have approved the recapitalization, and at the same time, Ethos Capital have decided to get out of those Brait shares, and that looks also to have been accomplished. Perhaps a little bit more light on that.
Yeah, look, Brait remains a favorite topic of mine. I mean, I had to laugh at Virgin Active's absolutely ridiculous post on Twitter/X in the past kind of week and a half, where they basically wrote this real nonsense about how the platform is a toxic environment, and so they've decided to, you know, move on to other platforms, and it's not their fault, it's everyone else's, which is a very strange message to write to your customer base, and is really just a reflection of some of the things that Virgin Active has gotten itself involved in and some of the controversies and what the reaction has been. Of course, the reason I reference Virgin Active is because that is, you know, one of Brait's big assets and has been one of the problems in this sort of post-COVID period, or specifically during COVID. Obviously, the gyms didn't do well at all, and they've struggled to come back from that. So this recapitalization of Brait, yes, it's a function of things like COVID. It's a function of how the underlying businesses did. It's also just a function of the way the business has been managed, the level of fees that have been taken out of it over the years. I mean, Brait is a long and difficult topic, to be honest. It really is just something that I am glad I didn't have my money anywhere near. If you talk to professional investors in South Africa, a lot of them will have some very strong words around the broader Brait ethos situation. And yes, shareholders have approved the recapitalization, but I mean, you know, that doesn't mean they like it. If you want to see how shareholders really feel, go and draw a share price chart. Don't go and look at the approval rate for these recapitalization resolutions. And over at Ethos Capital, they will be unbundling their Brait shares to their shareholders. So if you're a shareholder in Ethos, look, you were already an indirect shareholder in Brait. Now you will be the lucky recipient of Brait shares directly. And perhaps just one of the best indications really of how this whole structure has gone is that Ethos is also busy sorting out a structure called Blackhawk, which was basically related to a couple of directors who bought shares in Ethos, and Ethos guaranteed the debt related to the purchase of shares. Now, if that sounds odd to you, it's because it is odd. It's basically like, you know, just underwriting that the directors get to take more risk on the shares. And if things go badly, they kind of just hand them back and Ethos takes on the debt. So, you know, that for me is a pretty good summary of just the journey of Brait over the past few years. It really has been one of the biggest disappointments on the JSE. And certainly since those peaks of 2015, 2016, where there was a lot of exuberance on the JSE around a lot of these sort of investment holding companies, the market is a lot wiser now, and Brait is just one of the casualties from that period.
Thank you, guys. That's what we have time for this week. We'll chat to you next week as we continue to ask the finance ghost to float through the walls and figure out what's going on in the back alleys of business here on the African continent. That's it for this week. Join us next week on Ghost Biz.